Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. It is December the 19th. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson in studio. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
And Dr. Ray Pritchard, Ray's in Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well. When is the Pritchard hurricane? When is it forecast? When is it forecast to make landfall?
It is making landfall on Christmas Day.
Okay.
We got all of our kids and all of our grandkids coming into Kansas City for the week, starting Christmas Day up to about New Year's Eve. So, going to have all 16 of them here. 8 parents and 8 grandkids.
Now, how many are staying at the house, if I can get personal here?
Let me say, I think they'll be during the day, all 16 of us will be here on the different levels. And then during the evening, there should be about 12 of us here scattered throughout the house. So, we're just backed up the dump truck, Tim, and we're just downloading food and soda pop and Chex Mix and all the holiday goodies.
Oh, man. One more question. And how long is this going to go on, this marathon?
From Christmas afternoon until New Year's Eve.
Wow.
So pretty much 24 hours of noise,
all
joined, kids.
Let's all join hands now and pray for Ray and Marlene and that their house will still be some value.
That's right.
But anyway, I know you're looking forward to it. It is crazy and loud, but you wouldn't have it any other way.
That's exactly right.
Family around for Christmas and all the Pritchards getting to get together. And that hadn't always been the case because you guys have been spread out all over the country and even internationally, right, during most
of
the Christmas.
That's exactly. We've had them in China. Now we've got them in Chicago and Missoula, Montana, and plus here in Kansas. It's hard to get everybody together. We're a pretty modern family, right? So it's good. You know, if you get them for a few days, that's a blessing, and we'll enjoy it. We'll rest later.
Amen. Hey, Walker's here. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning.
Folks, if you want to join us on the internet, we're live video streaming at Facebook and YouTube, and we're posting the stories that we're talking about, too, today on our Facebook page. So go there, Facebook or YouTube, just type in Today's Issues. So check that out and take advantage of that. All right, Abraham Hamilton III is with us, too, because we got some legal questions coming up here, constitutional questions on this story of impeachment. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Okay.
Here we
go. Set this up for us, Fred.
I want to pick up on two words you just said to describe Ray's house over the next week.
Yeah.
Crazy and loud.
Right.
Let me take you to Washington, D.C. right now. The craziness, I suppose, has been going on for a while. The loudness occurred last night. Now, it didn't appear on screen in the midst of their articles of impeachment vote. But the Democrats were out celebrating last night. So were journalists. When they, to no surprise, the Democrats, not all Democrats, voted to impeach President Trump on two articles of impeachment, their abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Very interesting. Congresswoman Gabbard said present. That's how she voted last night.
What is that, noncommittal?
That is not, she said, I didn't feel comfortable voting no or yes. So she just voted present. Now, she's kind of on the outside with Nancy Pelosi.
She was the
right
only
now.
One. The rest of the Democrats, except for maybe two.
Two who voted against
So they impeached President Trump last night. The House did. The House Democrats.
The House Democrats. Democrats did.
Right. Okay.
All right. Now, it's very interesting. Before we get to the question to Abe, I just wanted to play you a little bit of Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, this morning. He took us down memory lane a little bit about impeachments in the past.
Okay.
Now, I want you to listen to what Mitch McConnell had to say. This is going to be cut number 4 about the seriousness of how impeachment has been treated in the past. Cut number 4.
This week wasn't even the first time House Democrats have introduced articles of impeachment. It was actually the 7th time. They started less than 6 months after the president was sworn in. They tried to impeach President Trump for being impolite to the press, for being mean to professional athletes, for changing President Obama's policy on transgender people in the military. All of these things were high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah, that was Mitch McConnell this morning. And what I say, take you down memory lane, just take you back over the last year and a half. And what, and the Democrats have been out there declaring we want to impeach them for all of those reasons. Those were all voted down, by the way, on a bipartisan basis in the House. And then he's, of course, he talked about what happened over the last few weeks. And he compared it to impeachment processes for Andrew Johnson and for Nixon and for Clinton, and how the investigation leading up to the impeachment votes took place over a year. A year it took in those cases. Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, and the gang drove it through in about 12 weeks. Now, that's the comparison right there. And if you don't think it's a political agenda, think again. But then last night, when it was all over, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi gets up wearing her black somber gown, and she declares, you know what? Now that we voted on articles of impeachment, I'm really having second thoughts about when I want to send it to the Senate for the trial. I'm having second thoughts about that. I want to see what they're going to do with the evidence that we present, and they're going to allow us. It's going to be cut number one, Brent. Cut number one.
Yes, sir.
Guarantee that the impeachment articles will be at some point sent to the Senate.
I'm not
guaranteeing that.
That would have been our intention, but we'll see what happens over there. We're not sending it tonight because it's difficult to determine who the managers would be until we see the arena in which we will be participating.
So, I guess
the question is, Abe, first of all, if we can get serious for a minute here, guys.
It's hard to do that listening to Nancy Pelosi.
But the question, the constitutional question at hand is, okay, we've had a impeachment voted on against the sitting president of the United States, Donald Trump, by the House. Now, the Constitution calls for that then. The evidence to go to a sent over to the United States Senate for a trial.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Okay. So what Nancy Pelosi is saying there, the Speaker of the House, the top Democrat, is she's saying she may withhold the impeachment articles, if that's what you want to call them, and not send them to the Senate. Till she is satisfied that the Senate will give it a fair hearing in her estimation. Is that what she's saying, A? And number two is, is this uncharted water? Where do we go? Where is she right? Can she hold this back forever?
So to answer the first question first, she reiterated it this morning, that she said this morning that she wants to see what witnesses they plan to call, what
the Senate.
What evidence they plan to consider before she sends the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
She wants to be the judge of the Senate.
She wants to control the Senate. Now, the Constitution gives the House of Representatives exclusive authority over impeachment. Removal of the president, however, is exclusively within the province of the Senate. So the question has to be presented back to Nancy Pelosi that if you want the president removed, why would you hold the articles back from the Senate? So then to the second question, whether or not she can do that, she can hold them. She can hold them. And how long? Who knows how long she's going to hold them? I just find it amazing that they go through all of this to impeach the president. And now you want to prevent the Senate from voting on whether or not the president should be removed from office. It's stretching the Constitution beyond its intended function. If you're going to impeach the president in the House, then the Senate has the prerogative to vote on it. Now, it's important, I've said it on this program before, that the Constitution does not require the Senate to hold a trial, but gives them the authority to do so. So separate branches of the Congress, they both have the exclusive jurisdictions. She can hold them, but I find it to be very, very remarkable that she's even saying this immediately after the Senate. After the House of Representatives voted just last night.
Hey, but I've always been under the assumption that the Senate had to do something. They have to do something. It's not, Mitch McConnell said the other day on Fox News that it's not like legislation where he can just put it on the shelf. The Senate has to do something, but you're saying that's not necessarily the case?
It's not the constitutional requirement. They have adopted Senate rules.
Okay.
Just like the filibuster is not in the Constitution. The Senate has adopted rules, but the rules are inaugurated once the Senate receives the articles. So the Senate rules, the rules of the Senate that they've agreed to abide by, mm-hmm. is that once the articles are transmitted to them, then they will conduct the trial.
Okay.
But it's if you are not going to send the articles to the Senate, Nancy, why did you impeach the president?
Well, that's a good point.
Okay, Abe, could they do this, for instance? If Nancy Pelosi just holds on, just sits on it for whatever PR reason, could the Senate go ahead and, I don't know, have some kind of vote anyway and absolve the president, acquit the president, even without those articles of impeachment having been presented to them?
Well, they can't acquit him prior to the articles of impeachment being sent, but the Senate can do various actions. For example, the Senate can host its own inquiries. It can. The Judiciary Committee can look into. They can, just like they had the hearing where Michael Horowitz testified based on the IG report. They can take actions, but they won't be able to formally acquit the president of the impeachment articles that the House passed until they have the articles.
I wonder if they could, because the Democrats have made public their summary of their trial. What was it, 600 pages?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Senate could take that and say, okay, this is the evidence that the Democrats said they were satisfied with to impeach this president, and they voted on this 600 pages of evidence. We're going to have a look at the evidence.
Yes. There's nothing prohibiting the Senate from looking at the Schiff report on the impeachment inquiry and conducting its own hearings based on the Schiff report.
Could it be that Nancy Pelosi actually is considering not sending the articles at all so that they can go into an election campaign saying he was impeached and never exonerated?
That is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Nancy Pelosi is posturing to make impeachment a campaign issue.
Mm-hmm.
To prohibit President Trump from going into the 2020 election saying he's been exonerated.
I think that would hurt her and the Democrats even more.
I think
it would. We all know what's going to happen here. Whenever the impeachment is sent over to the Senate, they're going to hold a trial, I guess. I don't know how that'll be done exactly, but President Trump will not be removed from office. All right, now, so everybody knows that's the way it's going to go down. Now, if the Democrats had control of the Senate, I think he probably would be removed from office. That would happen. So there would be an overturning of a duly elected president, in my view, and the view of more than half of Americans. I wanted to make this point. This is hurt. If you want to talk about politics and polling and voters and such, this Ray is hurting, has hurt the Democrats. Over the last 4 to 6 weeks is when this has turned on them. They were polling, if you believe the same polls, a slight majority of Americans did believe in impeachment. I question that, but let's just say we're looking at the same type polls. Now, those same polls, Ray, show that Americans don't think the president should be impeached by like 60-40. All right, this is not working for them. In fact, the president's numbers have gone up.
Look, this has blown up in the Democrats' face. They should never have. Look, if they wanted to do something, they should have done a censure, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't require any action by the Senate.
Right.
So now Nancy Pelosi is really stuck.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with the people who said that last night virtually guaranteed Mr. Trump's re-election in November, because the American people understand that impeachment is like an atomic bomb of political action, And it has to be, if it's going to be done, impeachment removal has to be done on a bipartisan basis. And you couldn't be more partisan than what happened last night.
Look, this backfired on the Republicans when they impeached President Clinton. I'm talking politics now. You may say, well, they needed to do that because he broke the law by committing perjury. Okay, he did. But I'm just saying the American people at the time did not agree that that meant that he needed to be removed from office. I'm just saying. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
So his numbers, Bill Clinton's numbers, went up, way up.
Right.
Because he was viewed as the persecuted, the unfairly treated. Mm. And that's the same benefit that, Walker, that President Trump's receiving right now from the general public. You got your Trump haters. You got your 30% of the Democrats, maybe 10%. Maybe as high as 40%. I don't think it's 40% that just hate his guts.
Yeah.
But this is benefiting him with the independent voters.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Abe. We had a Facebook viewer ask the question, could Pelosi hold on to these articles of impeachment? Hypothetically, let's just say the Senate turns blue. Democrats win the Senate. Trump stays in the Oval Office. Could Nancy Pelosi in 2021 just pull back out the articles of impeachment?
The House would have to vote on them again.
Because of a new term?
Because of a new Congress.
Okay.
Yeah, because the current congressional term will expire, and the House of Representatives would have to vote again.
Because everything done prior basically dies out.
It dies out with the prior Congress.
Okay.
Look, what Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, needs to do, her best case scenario is, you know the old expression, cut your losses? Or when you're in a hole and you want to get out of it, quit digging. Okay, what she needs to do, and I'll be glad to talk to her on the phone about this, should she call and ask for advice, what she needs to do is today or tomorrow send these articles, they call them, of impeachment, that is the papers, to Mitch McConnell and the Senate. And then she has a press conference and she says this, listen, the House has done its job. We've done everything we could possibly do. We voted. Now it's up to the Senate, and I don't control the Senate. Okay, and like they don't control the House, I don't control the Senate. And so that would be the best political move she could make, and I think that would resonate with, quote, the American people out there in terms of fairness. However, if she goes on playing politics with this, it's going to, as Abe said, I think earlier, it's going to hurt the Democrats worse. So I think she'll do this sooner rather than later, probably in the next couple of days for the reasons I just mentioned, get it off her plate. And that way she can also tell, you know, the base of the Democrat Party who've been wanting this for 3 years, ever since the president was elected. Did they try to impeach him before he was elected?
They talked about it,
but since he was inaugurated, as Mr. McConnell said, this is the seventh set of articles of impeachment that have been drafted.
They probably, I think Nancy Pelosi had to have a private meeting with those Democrats and tell them, listen, he must be elected before we can impeach him, okay? You guys at least hold on to the election. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think that's the best political move for her, and whether she does it or not, I think she probably will do that because she needs to get this behind her as soon as possible. That's my feeling. And not have this go on for weeks where she's asked every day, are you going to...
When are you going to send the articles to the Senate?
Yeah, yeah, because she's acting like she's king of the Senate right now with that kind of an attitude.
Well, I mean, she's already demonstrated that she's
queen
of the presidency too. So, hey, what's another branch of government?
What do you got, Fred?
While we have Abe here... Because over and over and over again, we've heard over the last couple of weeks, the Democrats say the two articles of impeachment they describe as abuse of power. Now, what they're referring to is the July 25th phone call with the president of Ukraine asking them on behalf of the United States to have a look into what was going on with the Bidens and that energy company, correct?
Well, that's what was said, but Nancy Pelosi said that they've been working on impeachment for 2.5 years.
Mm. Exactly.
So...
Exactly. Right. But the second was obstruction of Congress. And what they describe as obstruction of Congress is something the president constitutionally is allowed to do. It's called executive privilege.
Yes.
And every president, McConnell made this point this morning, every president for the last 200 years has used executive privilege. It's not a crime for a president to use executive privilege. And McConnell also said this, and I thought this was interesting, and I'm paraphrasing to a certain extent. Nancy Pelosi is trying to turn the presidency into a puppet of the House, that we have complete control over him. Mm. And that's not the way the Constitution was set up.
Mm.
I mean, it's just absolutely amazing what's going on here.
All right.
Well, no, you're right. Attorney General William Barr, in his speech recently in November before the Federalist Society, made that exact point, because most Americans have been taught that the constitutional separation of powers was promulgated to protect the American people exclusively from a tyrannical executive branch.
Mm.
When A.G. Barr said that's not the whole picture. They had clearly in view the tyrannical King George, but the ascendancy in England from 1689 to the time of our Constitution was actually a tyrannical parliament. Hmm. That in England, many viewed the executive as a feature of the parliamentary power. And so the executive power in America sought to create a distinct and separate executive power as a check against a tyrannical Congress and potentially a tyrannical judiciary. And what do we see happening right now? A House of Representatives, one House of Congress, attempting to assert itself over and above the president.
Mm. Wow.
Keep in mind here that for the first time in American history, not that we had a lot of impeachments, but the House of Representatives, obviously the Democrats alone, are impeaching a president that is wanting to have him removed. And for the first time in history, there's been no crime cited.
That's right. That's a very important point. There was not one criminal allegation made. The two prior incidences of impeachment were based on criminal allegations made.
This is something they call obstruction of Congress and abuse of power.
Mm-hmm. Both amorphous terms, none of them.
Right. It's just, you can throw anything there, huh?
You're right.
Throw anything in there. All right, thank you, Abe.
All right, thank you,
guys. Appreciate it, my friend.
Oh.
Abraham Hamilton III, join him this afternoon for the Hamilton Corner from 5:05 to 6 o'clock Central Time. I'm Tim with Ray and Walker and Fred. I tell you what, let's go ahead and take our time out, take our break, and we shall return momentarily with more of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. A lot of more. Go on, Tim. You can do this. Lots more stuff in the news. Okay. Lots more stuff in the news that we're going to talk about. So we invite you to come back. Join us momentarily. Stay with us.
Friday.
Star Trek question. What powers the impulse drive?
Dilithium crystals?
My second cousin twice removed was on dilithium crystals. And every time when everybody's sitting around trying to have some peace and quiet, his arm would fly up in the air. You didn't know if he was trying to salute you or get somebody's attention.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central.
And two different times when he tried to say something, the garage door went up and down.
On American Family Radio.
Random.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Our spiritual heritage tours are coming up in 2020 in June and September. I'm just going to go through the days here and what we see. On Wednesday, we go out to dinner at Old Town Alexandria, and we go to the World War II Memorial. On Thursday, we go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, the Lincoln Memorial, and the Korean and Vietnam Memorials. On Friday, we go to the Iwo Jima Memorial, Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, Jefferson Memorial, National Archives, and on Saturday, we go to Mount Vernon. Okay, so there you go. I got it all in. You can go and read about all this at our website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com. That's our Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour in June, and then another one in September. And then we also go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate trip. So go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starnes.
President Trump wrote a scathing letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and it was brutal, accusing the Democrats of violating their oaths of office, of breaking their allegiance to the Constitution. He accused them of declaring open war on American democracy. The president said the Democrats have spent the last 3 years attempting to overturn the will of the American people and nullify their votes. The president said their actions were nothing more than an illegal partisan attempted coup, and he's absolutely right. I would encourage you to read the entire letter on ToddStarnes.com. As you might imagine, the mainstream media, well, they've suffered a meltdown. One pundit described the note as unhinged. CNN's Jake Tapper said the president's letter sounded like something Kim Jong-un would compose. Well, on the contrary, Jake, that letter sounds like something an innocent man would write. Be sure to check out my latest podcast with special guest Oliver North. That's a free download at ToddStarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Merry Christmas from Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. I'm Tim with Walker, Fred, and Ray. We thank you for listening to AFR. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. Hey, I wanted to say one thing as a word of apology. Yesterday, we were talking about the homelessness situation in America, and because the Supreme Court had ruled that homeless people can now sleep on city sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Or they didn't rule that. They failed to overturn that.
Yes, I guess. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
And that's becoming a real problem in some of the big cities especially. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about the reasons for homelessness. I had mentioned alcoholism or mental illness. I don't know if I mentioned that. Mental illness and people hard luck, you know, that happens. And then I also mentioned our losers. Well, I shouldn't have said losers, because that then infers that people don't have dignity or worth in the eyes of God. Okay? What I meant to say was people who don't take responsibility for their lives or who don't want to work. That's what I meant to say. So I apologize for using that word to describe anybody, losers, who are homeless. But there are a significant percentage of these folks who they're happy.
Don't want to work.
They don't want to work. They don't want responsibility. They don't want bills. They just want their tent. They want some Vienna sausage, and they will sleep as long as they want to. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's sad to say, but that's the attitude that.
Yeah, and you run into it. I know, you know, our church does various mission trips, even out to Austin, Texas, to the homeless there, and try to minister to them. But even here locally, you know, one thing I've run into is trying to offer help without just handing out money, trying to offer meals or, you know, coming into church. And one thing I've run into is some. Actually, the vast majority that I run into don't want to eat dinner with you.
They don't want any strings attached to your help.
Yeah, they just want cash.
Right, you don't
want cash.
Huh?
Yeah, and I've been told, no, I just want cash.
Right, and oftentimes if you take them, say if you're hungry, I've done this before. Okay, you're hungry. Okay, right there's Burger King. Let's go. I'll go buy your money. No, I just want.
I just need some money.
Well, they want the cash, so they can go buy the beer.
Right. Yeah, or cigarettes. Or
a lot of times. So, again, it's, you don't want to lump everybody together. Ray, you've had experience in your church ministry with having been a pastor for all those years with, you know, a food pantry or what do you call what most churches do to help?
Well, food pantry.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people, as Walker's saying, some people you can help and some people you can't, right? And it's the causes of homelessness, they're all over the board. And we try to do what we can to help people. And if, as Walker said, if they want our help, good. If not, we still pray for them and wish them the best. That's about all we can say.
I never will forget one time our church, we were doing a work day, you know, a Saturday work day around the church, you know, to it was in the summer, mow the grass and weed eat and clean up and everything. And this couple drove up, and they said they were traveling to Florida. They were coming from somewhere, Missouri, going to Florida or something. And they didn't have any money, and they needed, you know, the church help them. And I mean, the pastor said, "We will be put you up in a nice hotel, three meals, and all we would ask and give you some cash to get on down the road. All we would ask is that you help us here. There's some things that you could help with right now, you know, to work, physical work." And so they stayed probably 30 minutes, and then they left because
never to be seen again.
They didn't want it that bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were putting them in a labor camp. They were asking them to do like an hour's work of physical labor to help, and they didn't want to do that. They just stayed about 30 minutes, then they left. And I think certainly they didn't want to come to church the next morning. Either. Anyway, so, you know, but you have all kinds of circumstances. This is why, really, quite frankly, it's better that people do charity and on a church level, on an individual level, and on maybe a local organizational level, like a Salvation Army does, for example, because you know who the frauds are, right?
And you know the people who really need help and want help.
Right. If people are coming back, I saw a report in our paper, local sheriff, that was talking about having to break up some homeless encampments. And he said to the fellow, "Why don't you go down to the Salvation Army?" The homeless fellow, and the guy said, "I don't want to go down there because they make you follow rules." That's what he said. He just said it like that. He just said, "I ain't going down there because they make me follow rules." So anyway.
Wow.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Walker, Fred, and Ray is in Kansas City. We're in Tupelo, MS. What's the next story, Fred?
Well, we've been talking about the impeachment articles vote by the Democrats yesterday, and I just want to take you to the living room at the White House last night.
Where?
The living room at the White House last night.
Okay.
Kind of the parlor there. And it was Trump and Melania sitting around watching this on TV.
I thought he was in Michigan.
Tim, you just ruined the setup.
Don't ask questions.
I'm so sorry, Fred.
That's right. Let Fred roll.
Spoiler alert. Okay, just for people, forget you even heard me say that. Okay,
all right,
go ahead.
I'll improvise. Okay, he was actually in Michigan with just a few friends.
Okay.
10,000 to be exact.
Do you have a recording of this friends meeting?
Yeah, I have a recording of this meeting with 10,000 friends in Battle Creek, Michigan last night. And if you thought Trump was in mourning over what the Democrats were doing to him back in Washington, I want you to have a listen. This is going to be cut number 11. Sounds like he was having a good time. Go ahead.
So what happens is Bill Clinton said to Crooked Hillary, Crooked Hillary, do you think he calls her Crooked Hillary? He might. Maybe he just calls her Crooked. He said, Crooked, I'm telling you. Crooked, I don't like what I'm seeing in Michigan. I was in Michigan, and I'm telling you, you had those signs. I saw some houses where they had four of them on one lawn and two of them on the car.
He's talking about signs vote Trump
in
the last election.
The last election. Yeah, because he's... That's kind of what, if you had to look at one state, Ray, where you say Trump shocked the world.
Right.
Well, Pennsylvania too, but because Pennsylvania had not gone Republican since 88
right.
in a presidential election. But Michigan, President Trump shocked the world there.
Did you see the crowd last night, Tim?
Oh. Man.
I didn't. What?
Packed to overflowing.
10,000, they say, and they were lining up early in the morning.
Where was that?
In Battle Creek, Michigan.
Well, I remember Election Day 2016. Everybody was sort of anxious, obviously, to see what would happen. And so I was looking at the internet, seeing if there was anything early on that was being a kind of indicator about how many things. Could Donald Trump shock the world in? And I remember reading it was a post, I think, on the Fox News from one of their reporters, and he said, early indications are there is a high turnout across the state of Michigan except for Detroit. Mm. Of course, Detroit's the largest city in Michigan. Mm. But they were, in other words, this is a good sign for the Trump campaign, mm-hmm. And as it turns out, it was that early indication on that morning that held true in Michigan as President Trump. Then Donald Trump took that state.
That was from Frank Luntz. I remember that.
Do you remember the same thing?
Yeah. Frank Luntz, who's a pollster,
yeah,
did some exit right. polling that morning.
And he was a high turnout in Michigan,
yep.
but not in Detroit. Of course, Detroit's a hotbed for Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. So, anyway, you're listening to today's issue. So, President Trump is back in Michigan. You know, he's wanting, obviously, and needing to win Michigan again. So, that's a good place to have a rally. Are you surprised, Ray, that the president didn't stay back in Washington? And
No. Okay. Listen, that's not his style at all. He's going to go. He's a street fighter, as we said. And if the Dems are going to throw this kind of below-the-belt punch at him, he's going to come out swinging. And that's what he was doing last night. I think we're going to see him be extremely aggressive in the days to come. You know, if his Twitter feed is going to be smoking hot in the days to come because they've impeached him. He's not going to take this lying down. He's not going to feel embarrassed or intimidated at all. He's going to speak out, so which I think is what he should do.
But, you know, it was a somber thing for the Democrats, what they've been up to over the last few weeks. Very somber. In fact, at one point last night when Nancy Pelosi was announcing the results of the voting on the two articles of impeachment, there were some Democrats that started to cheer. And she looked at them and pointed the finger at them like your mom used to when you're a kid and you pulled something off the grocery store shelf, like you're going to get it when you get home. She gave them that look. Now, because she wanted to create an environment for the people at home watching it on television that the Democrats were sorry to have to do this kind of thing. But she also, as part of the whole act, she wore a black dress all day yesterday. And this morning on Fox and Friends, Dana Loesch, a conservative talk show host, she was asked about Nancy's decision to wear the black dress. Cut number two.
Yeah, that sounds like an epic Halloween costume. I mean, that just gave me ideas for next year for a theme. I don't know why so much effort was spent on wardrobe when so little effort was spent on actually finding fact and truth in this investigation. They spent more effort coordinating their colors than they did on efforting this investigation. And everyone in America sees this. This is what I don't think Democrats realize. First off, they still don't understand why Trump won, and they still don't understand the electorate, and they think that by appropriating Johnny Cash and appearing in black, that's going to distract from the fact that they were actually gleeful for all the talk of being somber. What was it? Adam Schiff was celebrating with a steak dinner the night before.
Yeah, I think, Walker, you mentioned that. There were a bunch of Democrats out at dinner the night before.
Well, what I saw was the Washington Post reporters.
Oh, yeah. That was last night.
Last night, yeah. Tweeting out Merry Impeachmas.
Impeachments.
The Washington Post reporters?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that picture is out there. They were caught. celebrating this last night.
Yeah.
I mean, which goes to the collusion of the media with the Democrats.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, what Nancy Pelosi wanted to project, and she was smart to do this. Again, very few people question her political instincts. I mean, she's survived how many years and has been leader of the House Democrats for a long, long time now. So she's savvy. But what she knew would not come across well with the viewers out there across the country was a pep rally on the House floor, you know, a public dissing and enjoying it like a ball game or something where your guy comes down and slam dunks it and the whole Coliseum goes crazy, right? Yeah. She didn't want that kind of environment because that looks bad when you're talking about something as serious as handcuffing and physically removing a president from the White House who's been duly elected over this, over what they presented. So she knew that would look bad. Mm-hmm. So she said this is somber, and she wore black, and did she instruct all the other? Did all the other Democrats wear black too?
I'm not sure if they all wore black. Now, the other day on the Judiciary Committee, they were instructed to wear black, and all the females, of course, the men wore black suits, but all the females had black suits on and dresses as well.
Hold on a second, Walker. I don't really like your male female Fred. You know what? You're stereotyping people. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
If a woman wants to wear a suit, are you judging her? As a
Yes.
If a man wants to wear a dress, you're going to judge him. We can talk about this more later, Fred. You obviously aren't keeping up with the times. But my point is that they couldn't help themselves.
That's right.
These Democrats, some of them, half of them probably, are so rabid. They have a disease. It's called Trump derangement syndrome. That they can't help themselves. That's why Tlaib, the one from Michigan, the Democrat.
Yes.
That's why she says things about impeaching Trump, which I can't even mention here because they're so vulgar. Out loud, she says them out loud to the public. But they were what happens is on the House they were starting to cheer. Right?
That's right.
The Democrats were building up to that, like I said, like your guy just slam dunked on Trump, and your guys and ladies are starting to cheer.
That's what happened.
And Nancy Pelosi did what?
Well, like a scolding mom, like she didn't scream, but she pointed her finger at them and said,
You better sit down, shut up. Sit down, shut up. She was talking to her own Democrats.
Oh, yes.
Did we post that picture on our Facebook page yet, Brent?
No, I will.
Yeah. Okay. You need to see the picture, folks. It's classic. It's Nancy Pelosi. As Fred said, she looks like
mom.
Telling her 5-year-old, "You better zip it, or you're gonna get. I'm gonna take you out for a spanking."
Exactly.
That's what she looks like. So that's what happened.
It's amazing.
All right. Well, we have as our guest, as we do most Thursdays, our good friend Dr. Alex McFarland, co-host of Exploring the Word with Brother Bert Harper each afternoon here on American Family Radio from 3 to 4 o'clock Central Time. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everybody, and may God bless America.
Amen. Hey, what do you think about that spectacle up there in D.C.?
Well,
you.
Yeah, well, you know, they couldn't win legitimately, so they're cheating. You know, it reminds me. It goes all the way back to the schoolyard in, you know, kickball or softball, when the schoolyard bully couldn't win legitimately, they tried to take away the game by cheating, and that's what the Democrats are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And but hey, by the way, Tim, congratulations mm-hmm. on now being a member serving on the President's Faith Advisory Committee. That's a wonderful choice, and you're a great person to be a part of that.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on that advisory. It's not an official government entity, but I am joining the advisory council for the Faith Advisory Council for President Trump. And, you know, encourage him and his administration to stay the course when it comes to good judges and the pro-life issue and
Amen. And
marriage and family and all those things, religious freedom, religious liberty. You know, I've never understood why people, I don't want to get too much into this because these people are a minority, but there are some of our fellow Christians even who would say you shouldn't serve on a faith advisory council for President Trump, you know, because he did this or does that or says this. You know what? If somebody had been there's a difference between advising on somebody that can be counseled or can be encouraged to do something and is open to that, and or there's a difference between that and being a stooge
mm-hmm.
or a prop. Nobody wants to be, you know, just used. And so, but I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I've been around long enough to know when I'm being used. You know, for political purposes, somebody wants votes from our constituency, so they put you on something that it is meaningless.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But with President Trump, I'm proud of the many accomplishments that he's had, especially with the pro-life cause, especially with the judges, religious liberty. There's a lot of things that the president has done that he's fulfilled promises to the Christian community on, and I want to see that influence continue. So that's the reason I agreed to be on that.
Amen.
Hey, you had something you wanted to ask Alex about, and then and then Ray, you can chime in.
Well, Alex, we know speaks to thousands and thousands of young people around the country
at
every
airports.
Year. Airports
every year.
Yes,
there too. But I tell you, Alex, I wanted to pick your brains a little bit about a survey that came out in the last couple of weeks. And the bottom line on the survey was, and you know, we talk about millennials and. In a lot of surveys, they come out as having a very liberal worldview. But what struck us about this particular survey was a lot of these young people have also the conservative values that we normally associate with older, more traditional folks. And so that kind of surprised me. And I'm wondering if you're catching on to something that's going on amongst the 25 to 35-year-olds out there that
Are you talking about Christian young people, or are you talking younger people, I should say?
Younger people,
or are you talking about general public?
But even Christian young people as well, because we've seen surveys where Christian young people tend to lean liberal sometimes on some of the issues that we talk about. But I was pleasantly surprised that there seems to be a moving of the needle amongst the younger people towards more conservative values.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting in our conferences that we do a lot of surveys. And older people, let's say people that are 50 and older, at least in our surveys, and this is over 100,000 people in the last 20 years that we have a written survey from that they've turned in, those north of 50 are less likely to believe in hell than people that are, say, 18 to 30, interestingly. Now, on some social things, like things like premarital sex, younger people, at least in our surveys, have seemed to be okay with it, you know, quote, if people love each other or something like that. But I really do think that there's a trend, and we need to pray and work to see this trend continue, that younger people are beginning to skew conservative/biblical. And I think at least a part of it is because they've been witnessing for years now the damage done by progressivism, liberalism, relativism, and you know they're smart. Young people are there. Two things: they're smart and they're spiritually hungry. Now they may not have the knowledge base that a lot of us have had about American history and you know great Christian leaders, but they're spiritually hungry and they're teachable and they're willing to learn, and we have a great opportunity there to help point them towards the right path, not only in our content, but in the role models that hopefully we are.
Alex, let me ask you a related question, because I have heard you say that your heart beats to see revival and spiritual awakening come to our land. And as I travel around, I know a lot of Christians just feel so discouraged, almost defeated, almost hopeless, as if there could never be a spiritual awakening in the darkness we see around us. Two questions. One, is it possible we could be on the brink of an awakening, even though maybe today we don't quite see it? And number two, could it be that such an awakening, is it possible it could start not among us older folks, but among the young people?
Yeah, you know, I would say to everybody, do not be discouraged. Oh my goodness. You know, for one thing, Donald Trump is in office. He has made a profession of faith. He's surrounded himself with Christians, constitutionalists. He's appointed 50 appellate court judges that have the right, as far as we know, political philosophy. He's appointed two, you know, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. And hey, let me say, part of the reason this street fight has been going on about impeachment is, I would surmise behind closed doors, it's all about one thing and one thing only, and that's who's going to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Hmm. Because they know, listen, pro-life, natural law, constitutionalists. So folks, be encouraged. Now, in our homes and in our churches, we need to be biblical, we need to be prayerful, we need to be evangelistic. But yes, a revival can happen. And folks, I am utterly convinced before the rapture, and only God knows when that's going to be, we don't know, but before the Lord comes back, there's going to be an ingathering and a harvest and an outpouring of God's Holy Spirit. I would say in terms of the church, the thing that might hold back revival is prayerlessness. But in terms of our country, the thing that is holding back the blessing and the favor and the protection of God is abortion. Mm. I mean, there are a lot of things we could say, but we're going to have to stop killing the unborn to move from the judgment of God to the favor of God.
But there's a whole lot of pro-life momentum for the pro-life cause right now.
Amen. There really is. And look, hey, I know there are a lot of us that have been believers, and we've been concerned for this country for years, maybe decades. And it's easy to get weary. It's easy to get tired. But folks, be encouraged. Our God is able. Hmm. And good things are happening. I know it's not made the front page of the papers just yet, maybe. But I got to tell you, I'm probably the most encouraged I've been in 20 years about the spiritual, social, moral prospects for our future.
Hey, let me ask you this. We're talking to Alex McFarland. By the way, thanks for the homemade peanut butter.
Hey, bless you. I hope you like it.
Oh, man.
That's what Angie and I do in our spare time, make peanut butter.
He's not kidding, folks. I'm talking about literal.
For real.
I got a Christmas present from Alex, and it's a homemade with Alex's picture on it. Can people buy that, or you just make that for your own?
No, everybody tells us we ought to sell it. We haven't ever sold it. We just make it. My grandmother.
How do you make peanut butter?
You mash up peanuts.
Okay.
Seriously,
I walked right into that one, didn't I? Huh? Come on.
My grandmother
be a little
taught
more
me.
Technical than that. Make my question sound respectable, Alex. Peanuts. You grow peanuts. You buy those.
No, we buy them. We used to grow them when we had a farm. We used to grow them, but we roast them in the oven and roast them twice and then mash them up.
Okay, so you buy good old Southern word there, mash.
Yeah, that's
mash. So you mash the peanut and you roast them first, then you mash them up. But do you have to add butter or anything to
them?
Or?
Nope. The good Lord just put oil in there and it comes out.
Okay. So basically you're saying we all can do it.
Yeah, anybody can. I love you guys, and Merry Christmas to everybody. And folks, keep looking up. Jesus is on his throne.
Amen.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
Bless you.
That's Dr. Alex McFarland, our good buddy, joining us from North Carolina, where they mash things. I got something to tell you about that, if I can remember, on the way back, when we get back from the break. Thanks, Fred.
Merry Christmas to you guys.
Merry Christmas.
Yep.
We shall return in 5 minutes with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect the